Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. That's georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the Figge and the Grace Commission report of 1982 when we return right after this. You know, back in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on Earth. Today it's down to less than 38 days. And these global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, I call them, plan to use famine, disease, plague, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years under the Club of Rome plan. Well, in Revelation chapter 6, the God of Israel told us exactly the same thing, in essentially the same words, using the terms false prophets, war, famine, and disease. Well, back in 1920, 50% or more of our people lived on the land as subsistence farmers. They produced their own food, and they produced food for the rest of the world and for you and me. But today, we Americans have chosen to live in our cities, and now only 3% of our population live out on the land. 97% of us, then, are no longer self-sufficient in our food production. Now, we produce grain for export, all right, and then we turn around and import grapes from Chile and tomatoes from Mexico and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this global 2000 world population control program. Now, these globalists, with the genocide agenda, have a cause that they are willing to die for, and I say let them die for their cause, and let you and I live for ours. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Remember, my subsistence and survival school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. And if you're online, you can go to my website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were reviewing The Privateer. Let me give The Privateer and Bill Buckley a plug. Privateer is published twice a month, 25 issues a year, out of Queensland, Australia. Queensland, Australia. William A.M. Buckler, P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, 4567, Australia. And their website is www.the-privateer.com. The email is capt@the-privateer.com. Subscription price is $180 a year, Australian. I recommend it, and the reason that I do, he's a conservative, he's a foreigner, he's out of the country. He's not looking at the American economy the way we look at it. He's looking at it as an outsider, and he's looking at it pretty objectively, I would say. The numbers that he's taking come right out of our own government institutions. They're available for everybody. It's just that most Americans get their news from Dan Rather and the 6 o'clock news. They do not get their information from the government directly, or from the Treasury Department, or from the Federal Reserve, or Wall Street financial institutions. They believe pretty much what they're told on the 6 o'clock news. But what we've been told for the last 50 or 75 years, and where reality really sets in, is something altogether different, as these numbers show. Now, the Grace Commission, back in 1982, was formulated by President Reagan, and their job, their mission, was to project into the future, if we continue on with our budget deficits, balance of payments deficits, and our inflation rates, into the future, indefinitely, what's the outcome going to be? And it wasn't very rosy. The numbers in 1982 showed that by 1995, America would be in a state of hyperinflation with budget deficits exceeding $500 billion a year. Well, it didn't occur in 1995, but it has occurred, and now we're in the year 2004, and budget deficits are at $500 billion a year. They're actually closer to a trillion. And I showed you last time that government lies a lot. Government doesn't lie to us all of the time. They tell us the truth 75% of the time. They lie to us 25% of the time and keep us confused and deceived 100% of the time. Americans don't know whether their rear ends are bored or punched, and we couldn't find these numbers and the real facts with a roadmap at high noon with both hands. That's where reality is. But unless we get a handle on where we're at and where we're going, and if we keep listening to our government and our government leaders, they've been leading us down a road, down a path that has economic consequences. It has an ultimate end result. It's like going to Flo's Whorehouse week after week. You didn't get a dose of clap this week, last month, or the month before, but keep after it. And at some point in time, you'll succeed. Now, Americans have been on a deficit spending philosophy or policy since 1933. When FDR took over in March of 1933, he closed the banks. That was a bankruptcy petition, is what it amounts to. Then devalued the dollar from $20 an ounce for gold to $35 an ounce for gold. And then took gold off of or out of circulation. Later in 1965, Lyndon Johnson took silver out of circulation. They replaced silver coinage with clad coins. In 1973, a Republican this time, Nixon, Richard Nixon, separated the Bretton Woods Agreement of 1944, where we agreed to pay our debts in gold, took us off of gold and said, we're not going to pay these debts in gold, and we went on to a fiat currency. Now that's where we're at today. From 1973, for the last 31 or 32 years, we have now been on this fiat currency. Where is the end? It's getting closer. Watch this. The Icelandic corona gained 5% against the U.S. dollar in the week ending December 3rd. The British pound gained 2.6%, the Polish zloty 2.2%, and the Hungarian forint 2%. The Argentine peso declined 1%, along with small losses suffered by the Canadian and Australian dollars, but these two have been going skywards for weeks. Other currencies around the world are gaining against the dollar. The dollar is losing value, 6% a year, 20% over the past 3 years. Now, $3 trillion worth of U.S. foreign reserves are sitting in central banks around the world. 20% of the purchasing power of those reserves has been lost over the last 36 months. If you had $30,000 in the bank and you lost 20% of that $30,000 in value over the last 3 years, would you leave it in that bank? That's the question. Now, I wouldn't, and I find it hard to believe that the bankers around the world have taken a 20% loss over the past 3 years. They're complaining loudly now. They're complaining very loudly, and they're warning that they're going to stop using dollars. Listen to this. From January 2002 to July of 2004, the aggressive money creation by the Federal Reserve added a whopping $1.3 trillion in global reserve currencies. Now, they've expanded the total amount of dollars in circulation by $1.3 trillion from January of 2002 to July of 2004. So we're talking about 18 months, $1.3 trillion. Now, they're moving this up to $13.5 trillion, total dollars in circulation by the end of next year. It's a policy that we're on. It's a policy that we're busily working to expand the currency. Now, every time we expand our currency, it makes the other dollars that we've got in circulation worth less. And that's the way we're paying our debts. In other words, we owe you a bunch of money, so we're not going to pay you what we owe you, but we're going to pay you 75, 80, 85% of it. What would you think if next week your boss said, well, we're going to give you your paycheck, all right, but we're going to give you 75, 80, or 85% of it. We're not going to give you the whole amount. What would you think of that? What if you had money in the bank and the bank said, well, we're not going to give you 100% of what you got on deposit, but we'll give you 75, 80, or 85% of it. How do you like that? Now, that's what America is doing to the rest of the world. Now, we're the world's number one superpower. How do you think the rest of the world's going to react to that? Is it that we're so arrogant that we believe that we're going to stick it up your hind end sideways and you're going to like it and smile all the way? Or you think maybe some of these people are going to start jumping ship pretty shortly? Now, the European Central Bank barks. The European Central Bank President Jean-Claude Trichet urged the United States to cut its budget deficit and for all U.S. households to increase their personal savings in a document obtained by the Agence France-Presse. As regards the large and growing U.S. current account deficit, I believe that a gradual and smooth correction of this deficit would be facilitated considerably by an increase in the savings rate in the U.S. economy, implying both a reduction in public dissavings and an increase in personal savings. Trichet said this in a letter to a member of the EU Committee for Economic and Monetary Affairs, and this EU committee has fully agreed with Trichet. Well, you can't blame them, can you? I mean, if your bank was following a policy similar to the United States policy that we're following, dealing with the rest of the nations of the world and their holding of our debt instruments, wouldn't you write a letter to the bank and say, now, listen, if you want to keep me as a customer, if you want me to keep depositing money in your bank, if you want me to keep doing business with you, stop stealing from me. Stop shorting me on my account. Stop taking away my purchasing power, or I'm going to go someplace else to do business. If you were selling oil, like the Arabs are selling oil to us, and you agreed in 1907 that you'd sell a barrel of oil for $2.73 in gold coin per barrel, and then you found out a little later on that these paper dollars that you're accepting have been inflated. They're no longer worth $2.73 a barrel. Maybe they're only worth $2.50 a barrel, or $2 a barrel, or $1.50 a barrel. Wouldn't you raise your prices? Can you see why oil is $50 a barrel? Wouldn't you want to stop selling to somebody that kept shorting you? That's the point. The Bush administration seems to believe that the world is going to blink It's a game of chicken that we're playing. The world blinked when Nixon did it back in the 70s. And so now we're doing the same thing. We're devaluing the dollar and we're saying, you guys are going to like it or lump it. And I pointed out to you last time, you know, any one of these nations that goes out into the marketplace and starts selling these dollars, they don't have to sell all of them. They just need to start selling some of them. And then it's like a run on the bank. We'll see that in a minute. Now, the kindness of unknown strangers during the June quarter of 2004, foreigners absorbed the equivalent of 92% of all U.S. Treasury issuance. So the money that we're borrowing from around the world to finance our balance of payments, to finance the purchases of shoes and big screen TVs from Japan, China, and Philippines and so on, is being financed by borrowing the money, borrowing the savings of the people of France and Germany and Japan and China and Brazil and everybody else in the world. And there's, in my view, a limit to how far this can go. For instance, all of the money that's available every year to borrow, to use, is $800 billion a year, 8/10 of a trillion. Just our budget deficit and our foreign balance of payments deficit equal $1 trillion a year. That's 20% more than all the money in the world there is available to borrow to finance it. Now, what's that tell you? And, you know, if you're like I am, you know, you probably don't have a degree from college and you haven't studied at Oxford. Maybe you haven't been to the Harvard Business School. But, you know, even a plumber, a carpenter, or electrician ought to be able to figure out if there's $1,000 that you're short and the total amount of money that's available to borrow is $800, that you're $200 short of being able to borrow what you got to have. Now what are you going to do? And if you default, you know, the people that you're buying from, I can remember as a kid, if you didn't pay your grocery bill over at the C&V market, you'd go over for a quart of milk and a loaf of bread, and they'd tell you, no, sir, you haven't paid on last month's bill, and there's no more credit. Well, that's a shocker. Now, the United States government hasn't been faced with that over the last 75 years. That's because we've got a lot of assets, and we've had good credit. But even good credit and a lot of assets wears out at some point in time. Now, it always ends with a mad rush. Most, if not all, big market events like this, three-quarters or more of the interested general public will stand and gawk at a market segment or an entire market which is going up, up, and up. All the way, it looks like it's too high for them to enter. There's always a correction before the top, and that's when, as the cost of entry briefly comes back to meet the public, the mad rush to get in takes place. So for most of the first quarter of this year, the U.S. dollar was falling. For the second and third quarter, it was flat or rising. During the second quarter, U.S. financial asset acquisition by foreigners rose to an annual rate of an exceptionally large $956.4 billion. Now, that's almost $1 trillion. That's an enormous 82% of this was in highly marketable U.S. asset classes. This stuff is cash across the counter. And when we take a look here in a minute here at the foreign exchange, there's more money that transacts across the foreign exchange counters than across the stock market. $550 billion a year is transacted in these money markets, but only $7.5 trillion a year is transacted on the New York Stock Exchange. Now think about that. Every day, foreign governments, along with the United States, out here in the money markets, are exchanging yen, dollars, euros, Hong Kong money, dollars, whatever you call them, reals, Russian rubles and Indian rupees. All that money is being transacted at the rate of $1.5 trillion a day, $550 trillion a year. When you compare that to the New York stock market, the stock market is peanuts, $7 trillion a year against $550 trillion. Now, the people that are dealing in these dollars and euros are getting burned by the dollar. We've been cheating them now for 3 years. We've been screwing, bluing, and tattooing them to the tune of 20%. And the question arises, well, just how long is that going to go on? And that's what the Grace Commission said was going to happen if we didn't mend our ways back in 1982. Well, we didn't mend our ways. And so here we are 20 years later. Now, the Grace Commission didn't think it would go on this long. They predicted 1995. During the Clinton years, we cleaned up our act, went a long ways toward cutting the budget deficits. When Bush took over, the budget deficits are back with us again, and with a vengeance. It's not $120 or $30 billion a year. It's $450 and $500 billion a year. And that's what they're admitting to. And I showed you last time that they're understating it by about half, just like Arthur Anderson was stating or understating by about half what was going on at Enron and some of these other big companies that went belly up. So the accounting practices are deceptive. What they're doing is lying to us. That's the bottom line. Now, these foreigners can't keep this up. You see, the record annualized sum, $956.4 billion, poured by foreigners into the United States, was looked upon by both the Bush administration and Wall Street as their due, maybe even their birthright. That inflow is close to 9% of the entire U.S. gross domestic product, which inflation adjusted stands at $10.9 trillion annually. Now reduce the inflow to zero, and the U.S. financial system and economy contracts by a matching 9% of the U.S. GDP. That brings a howling U.S. economic recession. Millions of foreigners are in right up to their necks and against a falling U.S. dollar. So if, when they panic and they want out, then comes the deluge. Now, there's a basic and a fatal contradiction in the Bush administration's policy, which can be seen by noting that the entire U.S. external positioning, its occupation of Iraq and all, is undercut financially and economically because in the absence of the foreign money inflows, the U.S. could not do any of the above. Now, we're spending $200 billion, or getting close to it here, on this Iraq adventure. $200 billion. It costs money to go to war, and that's just where reality is located. Now we're bankrupt, and we are still able to make our payments, but we're fast approaching a period of time when we're not going to be able to meet our payments, and when that happens, then we have to start paying 50 cents on the dollar, 25 cents on the dollar, 75 cents on the dollar, and hope that your creditors, you know, when you can't meet all of your payments, you go to your creditors and you say, well, look, I can't pay you the full $300 that I owe you this month, but I can give you $200. Hey, I can't pay my full $1,000 mortgage payment, but I can give you $700 of it. Now, how long is that going to go on? You know, at some point in time, you've got to clean up your act. Nations have to clean up their acts, or they go into insolvency like Argentina. They go into hyperinflation like Brazil, 5,000% a year, 25,000% like Bolivia per year, 25,000%. That just wipes out everything that you've done in the past. Well, it makes your house values go up. I mean, if you want to be a millionaire, Americans are going to be multi-millionaires shortly. Yes, you, on Social Security retirement, raking in $1 million a month. Won't that just make you tickled? $12 million a year. And you won't be able to buy as much goods and services with $12 million a year as you're buying right now with $10,000 or $15,000. Now, that's what hyperinflation means. That's where we're headed. And I'm not going to stop it. I'm not going to slow it down. That's where we're going. That's where the switch has been set and the train's coming down the track. My point is, you need to take action for yourself. Either get off the train or get off the tracks. But you got to do something, even if it's wrong. Now, the world's expanding circle. The rest of the world has now formed a circle around the U.S. dollar. The rest of the world is now in the process of walking backwards away from the U.S. dollar, and the hole in the middle is now an unwanted U.S. dollar left more and more on its own. And while this is already going on, the rest of the world is in the process of establishing ever more integrated and interconnected monetary, financial, investment, and trade connections all around the circle. The only nation which is due to the policy of its leadership being left out is increasingly disconnected from this economic financial circle is the United States and the United States dollar. Right now, the Europeans are making deals with India. The Russians just got out of India the other day, making deals with India. And they're not making those deals in U.S. dollars. They're making those in euros and rupees and rubles. And you can't blame them. Now, if you stop and think about where American largesse has been, remember the Marshall Plan after World War II? I mean, it was America that jumped into Europe and said, here, let's loan you the money and let's help bail you out. Whenever there's a famine in Ethiopia or Eritrea or some other place, you know, in the world, it's always America that runs in and says, here, let me help you. It's always been that way. Well, I guess we could expect the rest of the world to jump in and help bail us out. And, you know, over the last 3 years, at the rate of nearly $1 trillion a year, the rest of the world has been doing that for us. But, you know, there's a limit, isn't there? You know, if I jumped in and I said, well, gee, Bob, let me help you make your mortgage payment this month, and gee, let me help you make your car payment, does that mean that I'm going to do it for you next month, and the month after that, and the month after that, and for the next year, and the year after that, and the year after that, and does it ever come to an end? Do you ever get your house in order? Do you ever get to a point where you can get back on your feet, get to work, and pay your bills? Maybe we need to stop our consumption. Maybe we need to pull in our horns. Maybe we need to consume less, spend less, save more. Anybody ever thought of that? I know it's a wild new idea, but it's coming whether we like it or not. Now, the Bush administration is marching the increasingly tattered remnants of the U.S. dollar toward a cliff, and it's doing the same thing to the U.S. dollar's remaining standing as the world's central reserve currency. Should the U.S. dollar lose its reserve currency status, it will contract to become a very large regional currency. Americans will discover that from that point on, they will have to pay for the goods and services that they buy around the world, not in U.S. dollars, not in their own currency, but they'll have to pay for it in the currency of the nation which is selling them these goods. Shorn of its reserve currency status, offering to pay with U.S. dollars will no longer be accepted. And should the situation extend further, and it easily could, then the U.S. dollar, after the loss of its reserve currency status, will decline even further in value, as well as international standing. And at the end of the day, the barring changes in U.S. policy, the U.S. dollar will resemble Latin American banana republic currency. And that's where we're headed. I would say that it's a part of the New World Order plan, that now it's time to torpedo the U.S. economy, and indeed the entire world's economy, and put this new monetary system and the New World Order into place. I'd say they're ready to do that. The monetary policies that are being followed by the Bush administration are insane. Of course, our monetary policy has been insane since the 1930s, but then it has gone totally berserk in the last 3 years. So the only conclusion that I can come to is that it's being done intentionally. After all the people that are in office, you know, the Treasurer of the United States and the Secretary of State and the President of the United States and the Secretary of Defense, I mean, all these people are pretty smart people, you know. They didn't get to be President and Secretary of State and Treasury Secretary by being dumb. They know a whole lot more than I do. And I'm just reporting the facts, and those are the facts that the government's putting out. But a little different twist on it. You know, the government's telling you, well, gee, don't worry about a thing. Everything's fine. I mean, after all, you still have a job, don't you? I showed you last time, didn't I, that 25% of American jobs have now been outsourced. 25%. Now, we got 62% of our population working in the United States. We had 75% of our population working in the United States in the 1930s during the height of the Great Depression. 25% were unemployed. Today, we've only got 5% officially unemployed. Well, what about that other 33% then? Well, the 75% of us that are working are supporting that 33%. I guess we do it through welfare and food stamps and college loans and things like that to keep those people going, don't we? Well, U.S. policy is in stark contradiction. We're out of money, we're out of time, and we're out of our minds. Now, in reality, all contradictions resolve themselves, and it's always reality which wins. In the case of the Bush regime, this resolution will most likely arrive during the first half of next year. First half of 2005 is where reality, where the rubber should meet the road. And the vast external money inflows into the U.S. financial system have already crested, as can be bluntly seen from the fall and fall and fall in the international value of the U.S. dollar. To Americans, this is like seeing the rest of the world become a more expensive place, the flip side of which is Americans becoming poorer. So when you go to Europe or you travel around the world, you're going to find that your dollars buy less. Things are more expensive everywhere you go. Not because they're raising their prices, but because they're devaluing your dollar. Well, after all, you're printing more of them. Well, how would you like to go on vacation, and while you're on the Carnival cruise, you look in your pocket and you say, well, gee, I've spent half of my money. So you go down to your room and you just print up a bunch more money and go back up to the ADAC lounge and start spending the money you just created. I mean, if you could do that, that's what America is doing. But when you get millions of people doing that, pretty soon, you get too many dollars out there chasing too few goods. Prices rise. That's where reality is. So the sum of lessons derived from economic history is that any nation can, if it chooses, have a large military and even external military engagements, but only at the accumulating and very real economic cost of an exhausted civil economy with more and more people increasingly impoverished. The other basic lesson from economic history is that nations with small but sufficient militaries and no external engagements can have flourishing civil economies with climbing individual living standards. The Bush administration seems to think that there's a third way, to have the rest of the world fund both the military and their engagements, so that the real economic burden does not fall on the American people. That means that U.S. external debts climb to the point at which the rest of the world refuses to lend us anymore. Kind of reminds me of Social Security. You know, Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. It takes more input. At some point in time, if you look at the numbers in Social Security, there's 3.2 people now paying into Social Security for everyone drawing out. In 1957, there were 16 people paying in for everybody drawing out. In 1945, it was 45 to 1. 45 people paying in for everyone drawing out. 1940, it was 80 to 1. Can you see a trend there? From 1940 to 2000, it has moved from 80 to 1 to 3.2 to 1. It's moving to 1 to 1 by about 2020 to 2030. Well, then I guess from one person paying in and one person drawing out, there'll be one person paying in and two people drawing out, and then one person paying in and three people drawing out, and so on up the line. At some point in time, that one person paying in is going to run out of energy. He just simply will not be able to support 3, 6, 12, or 24 other people. There just comes a point in time when the rest of the people in the world will not be able to support Americans in a standard of living to which they have now become accustomed. They just won't have enough energy to fuel that kind of support. Not to say that they just plain will get tired of it and won't do it because they don't want to, but because even if they wanted to, they won't have the physical strength or energy to do it. Well, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Or if you're online, just go to the webpage, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send an email request. That's georgegordon.org. Remember that the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone, and they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or of this radio station. Again, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please go to the website georgegordon.org or call the Law School direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're reading from the current Privateer. The Privateer is published twice a month, 25 issues a year. It's a private economic newsletter. It's probably one of the best that I've seen. I recommend it to all of my listeners and students. If you'd like to get a copy, you can write to William A.M. Buckler, B-U-C-K-L-E-R, Bill Buckler, P.O. Box 2004, Noosa Heads, Queensland, Australia, 4567. Or you can get on their webpage. It's www.the-privateer.com. Their email address, capt@the-privateer.com. Well, let me break into my thought here for a minute. Let me show you a short treatise here from Kitco with Paper Money Confidence's Suspicion Asleep. Former Prime Minister of Great Britain, Benjamin Disraeli, described confidence in money as suspicion that has gone asleep. In the world of irredeemable paper money, which has existed now for 30 years or over 30 years, the confidence issue is gradually coming to the forefront, especially with the U.S. dollar, the world's reserve currency. And the implications now for Americans are profound. John Exter, the father-in-law of the senior author of this commentary, retired economist and central banker, warned 34 years ago, when Richard Nixon closed the gold window to foreigners, that the world had embarked down a treacherous road when it chose an IOU, nothing paper, fiat money system with floating exchange rates. He envisioned an era of severe dollar debasement and ultimate repudiation of the dollar as a store of value, which would then eventually undermine confidence in the global paper money system. The dollar's problems have taken center stage and suspicion has awakened. I remember the Grace Commission and the Figge report told us the same thing. This is what we can expect. They said you could expect this by 1995. Didn't happen in 1995, but now the rubber is on the road. It's 2005, 10 years later, here we are. There's more. In a $40 trillion world economy, the global irredeemable paper money system has mushroomed into a foreign exchange market where the turnover of currencies exceeds $1.5 trillion a day. According to the Bank of International Settlements, in other words, almost $550 trillion in foreign exchange transactions occur annually, compared with only $7.5 trillion of annual turnover on the New York Stock Exchange. Now, this market is humongous, and it's cash. This is a cash market. This is where you take your dollars and then you turn them into yen. This is where you take your yen and turn them into euros. This is where you trade your euros for Russian rubles or vice versa. And this market changes daily, and every currency changes daily. All of these currencies are being traded constantly at the rate of $1.5 trillion a day. The New York Stock Exchange, with all of its trades, totals $7 trillion a year. The foreign exchange market is $550 trillion a year. Just take 550 and divide that by 7. It's 78 times greater. It's like 78 New York Stock Exchanges. That's how big it is. And we Americans are in that marketplace screwing everybody else in the world right now at the rate of 6% a year. And the Figge report, the Grace Commission said that when our budget deficits reached $500 billion a year, that tax and spend would no longer control the economy. The economy would go out of control. I would submit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that the American economy is, in fact, out of control. And the Grace Commission and the Figge report were exactly on point. 10 years off of their target, but they were certainly on point. Now, the foreign exchange market, which dwarfs all of the world's financial markets, is an interbank or interdealer market based on a network of hundreds of major banks across the world. Major foreign exchange centers are London, which takes 50% of the market, and then New York, Tokyo, Zurich, Frankfurt, Hong Kong, Singapore, Paris, and Sydney is the other half. Trades above $1 million constitute the institutional side of the market, while those below $1 million represent the retail side. Foreign exchange players are typically governments and central banks, commercial and investment banks, hedge funds, businesses, consumers, investors, and speculators. Of all of the foreign exchange transactions, 85% involve the seven major currencies. 85% of all of the transactions involve the dollar, yen, Swiss franc, British pound, the euro, Canadian dollar, and Australian dollar. Now, because the U.S. dollar has been the world's dominant reserve currency for more than 60 years, the American mindset seems to be that the reserve currency status is secure and permanent, regardless of America's irresponsible economic policies and resulting economic imbalances. And it seems to have been forgotten that over the past 2,000 years, dominant international currencies have come and they have gone. So without drawing much attention from American mainstream economists and politicians, the U.S. dollar's position as a reserve currency has diminished from 80% of the entire market 30 years ago down to 65% today. And that figure seems likely to continue down as the euro, for the time being at least, is becoming the more preferred currency. After all, the euro era and the euro area represents a large economy, not much smaller than the U.S. economy, and is the world's biggest exporter. It has financial markets deeper and actually more liquid than the United States, and the euro area is a net creditor, while the United States is a net debtor nation with a history of using its currency devaluation to reduce its external deficits. To say that the United States has undermined its world reserve currency position is an understatement. Now, what they mean there when they say that America has undermined its world reserve currency position is that America has been stealing from the rest of the world, and they're getting tired of it. You see, they use our American dollars as a currency to hold their values, to store their wealth in. You know, it's like we put our money in the bank, and we put $1,000 in the bank, and at the end of the year, we find out that the inflation rate has been 6%, so we lost $60 worth of our purchasing power. $60 worth of purchasing power. And that's what's going on with the American dollar. Every year, it's losing 6% of its value, and when they inflate that money, they're stealing from the people that are holders of those dollars. It's just a blatant theft. Well, up to now, foreign central bank intervention as buyers of dollars has kept the dollar from falling any lower. But with some $3 trillion of foreign exchange reserves still sitting in central banks around the world, when the selling really begins, the dollar will slide dramatically and financing America's current account deficit will become impossible. That's the bottom line. Now, the most recent country to go into insolvency was Argentina. And they're still suffering the trauma from it 2 years later, 3 years later now. It started about this time in 2001. Now, they'll recover from it. Everybody does. We will recover from this. I mean, it's not that the end of the world comes when your currency collapses. You know, the world didn't come to an end in 1783 when this happened to us the last time. The world didn't come to an end when we went into the Great Depression in the 1930s. But boy, it was a tough row to hoe. Some big and major changes occurred on the scene, whether we liked it or not. Well, through the mid-2004 period, those central banks holding the most dollars were financing three-fifths of the U.S. deficit. In fact, the global foreign exchange reserves in dollars, 65%, have risen $1 trillion over the past 18 months. Did you get that? Over the past 18 months, we have added $1 trillion to the world's reserve dollar collection. Not because the U.S. economic prospects are so good or because we've exported so much, but because U.S. dollar purchases and purchasers are attempting to hold down their own currencies for competitive trade purposes. The large capital inflows have financed the American consumer buying binge and have expanded the deficit and the current account deficit, which is currently at 6% of gross domestic product. It's twice the size of the deficit in the late 80s when the dollar fell sharply. Moreover, in the 1980s, the United States was not a net foreign creditor, but today, Moreover, in the 1980s, the U.S. was a net foreign creditor, but today, we now have net foreign liabilities, which by year end should reach $3.3 trillion, or 28% of our gross domestic product. Now, while the dollar has traded recently at around five-year lows against the yen, Russia's central bank has further shaken the confidence in the dollar by hinting that it is considering diversifying from dollars to euros. The 12-nation euro fell from its 1999 debut to 82 cents. In 2000. But since then, it has risen 63% against the dollar. Adjusted for inflation, the U.S. dollar is still not cheap, even with its recent declines against the yen and the euro. The dollar's real trade-weighted value against a broad basket of currencies is actually close to its average level over a 30-year period. Historically, an overvalued currency needs to undershoot its fair value by a wide margin in order to reduce a country's external deficit. But so far, the real broad trade-weighted dollar has come off with only 15% over the past 2 years. From its peak in 1985, the dollar dropped by a third, but the U.S. current account deficit is much larger now, much larger than it was in the 1980s. The conclusion then, over time, the dollar has a long way to drop, perhaps destined to lose over 30% of its current value, thus pushing the euro exchange rate to over $1.80. Moreover, the U.S. current account deficit won't be corrected with a fall in the dollar alone. Americans will again need to begin saving at meaningful levels. Foreign exchange traders in Japan and China are especially becoming unnerved by the dollar these days. Japan's U.S. dollar holdings have reached $817 billion. That's 90% of foreign currency reserves. 90% of Japan's foreign currency reserves are held in dollars. And China's exposure at $600 billion, 35% of foreign currency reserves in that country, is not far behind. Both countries are pressuring the Bush administration to balance the American budget and improve domestic savings rates. That, however, is going to be next to impossible to achieve. It's not current government policy. Consumer spending represents two-thirds of the $11 trillion American economy. Think of that. You take our total economy and two-thirds of it is consumption. Only one-third of it is production. Now, we Americans have gone off on a tangent, wouldn't you say? I mean, just think of your family, your total family budget. Two-thirds of your family budget is in consumption rather than production. Don't you have to produce at least as much as you consume? I mean, you know, my common sense says that if I'm going to consume $1,000 a month, then I've got to produce $1,000 a month. We Americans produce $1,000 a month and consume $1,666 a month. Now, our consumption rates are going to drop precipitously, and our standard of living is going to drop precipitously and swiftly and severely and suddenly, and it isn't going to be pleasant. I'd suggest that we start getting used to a little less. I told the class the other day, I said, the logical thing to do is to get rid of your dollar-denominated assets. They're going into the tank, and convert those assets into something you can use. So the other day I sat down and I drew up a list, and I came up with 50 hardware items out in my shop that I need to bring up to date. For instance, I said, well, get me several boxes, and we ordered, you know, 5/16 washers and 3/8 washers and half-inch bolts and, you know, all those kinds of hardware, cotter pins and things like that. So, well, take a look at your olive oil supply. You know, how much olive oil do you need over the next 4 years? Because remember, the Great Depression started in 1929, actually got to rocking about 1930 through 37, about a seven-year period. Officially, it was October of 1929 to September of 1937, but, you know, in roughly, you know, 6-7 years. And then remember that this seven-year cycle fits what we call our land Sabbath cycles. I don't know if it was God that determined that the thing ought to run 7 years. I can't say that, but it just happened that it ran 7 years. And then there's another factor that comes into play. And that is, there's a jubilee that comes around every 50 years to satisfy all debt. You know, you have to forgive all the debt. Have you ever noticed that in our interest and fiat money system, we never forgive any debts? Everybody has to pay 100 cents on the dollar plus interest forever. And it makes the entire process grow geometrically, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32. It gets to a point where it just collapses of its own weight. That's where we're at now. The world economy is just about to collapse of its own weight. And you can rest assured that the international bankers will come in, blame gold. It's got to be gold's fault. And let's get rid of paper money and let's go to a cashless society. Let's get a mark in our left hand or right hand and in our foreheads, and let's use debits instead. I mean, let's not go back, you know, to commodity money. Let's not go back to practicing gold and silver coin, which is what God told us, not to use unjust weights and balances. Let's go into an unjust weight and balance that's digital. That's what's coming. You can count on it because that's what God told us is coming. But there's more to the story. Listen to this. It's unrealistic to assume that Americans' buying binge is going to end anytime soon and the people are going to turn from spenders to savers. America's large budget deficits are also here to stay, fueled by the tax cuts and the $200 billion in growing price tag on the Iraq war. So there's little prospect of getting America's financial house in order. In fact, financial disorder is programmed into the future as far as we can see, which means the dollar's position in the world will continue to erode and may reach the point where foreigners will not finance the deficit without much higher interest rates. The dollar, in the midst of that type of crisis, would collapse, taking the stock market with it and ushering in an ugly U.S. recession, which would engulf the global economy because the United States of America represents 20%, one-fifth of the entire global economy, and create a tumultuous foreign exchange market. A tumbling dollar would especially put upward pressure on the euro. Also, Asian currencies would be distressed as their currencies strengthened, and their domestic demand would be stimulated to compensate for dwindling exports. The period ahead looks like it will be one of fierce competitive currency devaluations among the world's major economic forces. And in a world where confidence in any paper currency is really just suspicion that has gone to sleep, there will be a lot of suspicious participants in the foreign exchange markets who will remain permanently awake. Great fortunes are going to be made in foreign exchange markets by a small, known contingent of tried and tested professional foreign exchange traders and money managers. But the bulk of the world's people, due to a lack of know-how, will end up being hurt by the tumultuous period ahead rather than from benefiting from it. I mentioned that to you the other day. You want to be cash strong right now. Get rid of your stocks, bonds, houses, real estate, convert it to cash, take the cash and convert it to gold. bury the gold in the hole in the ground and just sit back and relax. I mentioned this a time or two. Russell Harvey did that in 1927. He got the cue from Averill Harriman back in the late 1920s. The big money people started moving their money out of the U.S. stock market and into gold. And that's what you see the big money barons today doing, like Buffett the other day. Buffett, he's moving out of the dollar and into the euros, moving into gold and silver. Just bought a huge position in silver. Yeah, that sends me a signal. If a guy that's got $36 billion moves his assets out of dollars and into silver, it sends me a signal. It says, you know, that guy's probably smarter than I am. That's why he's got $36 billion. If I was as smart as him, I'd have $36 billion and he'd be sitting here doing the radio show. So I thought, well, maybe I can do a little better for myself. So I got out of dollars and I got into silver. And I think that's probably a better place to be. Now, remember the money changer? I mentioned that a time or two. There's money being made right now. Every time there's a shift in the dollar, gold, and silver values, there's money being made. And you can make that too. I'll bring up the money changer here in a program or two, and we'll give you their name and address again. Don't forget the privateer. I think the privateer will give you more hard news and more hard information than probably any other economics newsletter, that and of the money changer. The U.S. dollar is likely to end up toppled as the world's reserve currency as a result of all of this, perhaps replaced by a temporary hodgepodge basket of currencies centered on the euro. But make no mistake about it, irreversible damage to confidence will be inflicted on the world's paper currency system, and the stage will be set for the inevitable repudiation of all unbacked paper currencies. And eventually a new system of currencies centered around gold will be initiated, and confidence will then be restored and suspicion will be asleep, at least until some other future generation also tries to substitute paper for gold. Well, before we get on to gold, boys and girls, I'm betting on a cashless society and a fulfillment of Revelation 13:16. I think we'll have marks in our hands and foreheads before we have gold money worldwide. Hey, we're just about out of time. We've got to leave it right there. We'll be back again tomorrow night, same time, same station, and we'll pick up inside the United States. Consumption is rampant from the privateer. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to the website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from a scriptural perspective. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by pre-arrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. And The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. There's the signal. Time's up. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.